and welcome to Baby Fever. I'm Astrid.
And I'm Trey.
And today we are having a wonderful interview that we're extremely excited about.
Yeah, today we have the privilege of speaking to Ian Stones, one of UK's leading fertility specialists with 14 years of fertility treatment experience, co-founder of the Fertility Network, UK's male fertility support group, and one of the facilitators of the HIM fertility support group. Welcome so much. We are so happy to see you, Ian.
That's lovely.
Thanks for spending the time.
It's really lovely when people do an intro like that, because it kind of, it's like, oh yeah, I do that, don't I? I do that. It's kind of, you know, how often do we say these lovely things about ourselves? So it's great to be here. This is awesome. So thank you for inviting me on.
Of course. You know, I think for anyone who's listened to this podcast in the past, you may remember that I've spoken about Ian before, because Ian was part of a webinar, I guess would be the right way to put it. Part of a webinar that we covered a couple months ago now. And when I saw that and heard it, I was just very interested in all the things that Ian had to say, and feel very fortunate to now be able to speak to him myself.
And it was kind of surreal.
It's very fortuitous that it worked out. That's not always the case, but I'm happy today that it is. We're going to jump right into the questions to be respectful of your time. So Ian, can you just introduce yourself outside of how, you know, we know you, and tell us exactly what it is you do as a fertility specialist?
Sure. I mean, you know, you gave me a lovely intro as it was anyway, but yeah. Well, my background and training is actually Chinese medicine and acupuncture. That's how I kind of started my career. And, you know, that very shortly after I started my practice, I did some advanced training with a lady called Zita West, who anyone who's on a fertility journey, certainly in the UK, will know that name. She's quite big in the fertility world, got her own IVF clinic. So I did quite a lot of advanced training with her. So that meant I started seeing a lot more fertility clients. And for 14, 15 years now in practice, I've treated hundreds and hundreds of women coming through my practice. And, you know, I'm there to support them through the emotional and physical challenges of trying to conceive. You know, acupuncture is part of what I do. But actually there's a whole sort of realm of emotional support, coaching, lifestyle and dietary advice that forms part of that. And it was about nearly 3 years ago, I was in a meeting and we were talking, as this was a bunch of other therapists, and we were talking about sperm health and a male factor fertility. And I was just sitting there thinking, hang on a minute, who's looking after these men? Nobody's looking after them. And I thought, actually, you know, I want to explore that. I want to find out what I can do to support men. So that led me down the world of male fertility, and actually kind of probably more along the lines of male fertility coaching. So not necessarily seeing men in clinic, but actually just working with them remotely over the phone or over Zoom or whatever. And I'm very much focusing on the lifestyle factors, the diet factors, emotional support, if that's what a guy needs, or it may come out in the conversation. But also a really kind of important part of that, of what I do for men, is then direction. So direction in terms of what they're doing for themselves, but also direction around testing and support. And where else they can go, because, you know, what I've learned is really there's nothing out there for men. There's nothing that's actually directing them. So, you know, that's where I'm at, really. So, you know, I have this kind of background, but really where I'm going now is probably a slightly different angle, but very much about male fertility support, because it's something I'm really passionate about, absolutely love. As a subject, truly fascinating. And I think when you can see that you can make such a difference in somebody's life, and that you can fill a gap that other people aren't filling, you know that that's making a really positive change. So I think that kind of summarizes me and what I do.
Oh gosh, that's a lovely way to put it.
That's really cool too, because I feel like at least what we've run up upon is the very like Western medicine sort of like highly medicalized, like don't do anything unless there's like specifically a problem sort of approach, you know, as opposed to what it sounds like you're describing, which is like so much more holistic, in kind of every sense of the word.
Yeah, very much so. And it, you know, for any couple that trying to conceive, once you're, you know, a little way down the road, you end up in front of a doctor and having blood tests and, you know, for the woman, internal scans and this, that and the other, and the guy does his semen analysis. It does suddenly become very medicalized and becomes a whole load of interventions. And, you know, certainly a lot of the women I work with, they've already done all the lifestyle and diet stuff to some degree. You know, they're on these supplements, they're on those supplements, they're doing this exercise, not doing that, and, you know, cut out this and cut out that. But it is important, I think, to get that whole picture, like I said, that kind of holistic picture of, okay, well, what's going on at work? You know, how are you managing that? How are you managing your stress levels? You know, how are you getting on with family? You know, how are you getting on with friends? You know, what are you doing about your sleep? How's that? Because it just becomes this big pressure cooker of emotions and stress and do's and don'ts. And it's really important to acknowledge all of that and then find ways of coping with it and finding, you know, little life hacks that make things simpler and easier. Because I think your capacity for stress, or your stress bucket, as I talk about it with some clients, you know, it's pretty much near full by the time by living life, really. But you chuck fertility on there, and your stress bucket can easily become, you know, quite overwhelmed and overflow. So it's okay, what can we work on together? What can we change to make life a bit easier and a bit more relaxed and enjoyable whilst you're going through this process?
It's an awesome metaphor. I feel like that works.
The stress bucket?
Yeah. I like that.
I think you're probably right. Ought to credit somebody else for that, but you know, it works.
Yeah, I think you're right that like most adults already have a lot. And I think especially with us, or particular, I don't know, when we made the decision to start thinking about fertility and to start thinking about trying, I don't think I understood that there would be more stress that would come out of that.
Me neither.
And
didn't even occur to me that it would be stressful.
It would be like more on the load. And so you're right in that it can be a lot, especially unexpectedly, because you don't really know what it's going to look like for yourself.
Well, no. And you know, as we were chatting before we started here, it's kind of, you know, we're all taught that it's a piece of cake, isn't it, to get pregnant? You've only got to have unprotected sex once in a month, and that's it. You know, you're going to be pregnant. That's the message we get at school, you know. And it's just ridiculous, because that's not the case. You know, God, the things that have to happen for conception to occur are just, you know, monumental. So to actually get educated and understand your fertility and understand how it actually works is so, so important.
Yeah. So with, you know, you covered what you just spoke about, so many different things that you can do at your practice and the different reasons why people may come to you. And I am interested if there's like an overall trend in, or a place when people are coming to you that they most often are at. Like, do you tend to see people coming to you at the same time in their process for the same things? Or is it you see all across the board?
That's a good question. And typically, people tend to come to somebody like me when they're quite a way down the journey, or down the path. So they may have been trying for 18 months, 2 years. They may be heading to their IVF cycle. They may already have one under their belt, but it's failed. So they're usually quite far in, which is a real shame in some ways. Obviously there's masses that I can do to support them at that stage. But you know, they've normally, like I say, they've done the diet, or they've looked at the diet, they've looked at supplements, but you know, they're not sure if they're doing the right thing, or there's more that they could be doing. But actually, you know, if you worked with somebody like me or other therapists or whoever else, you know, ahead of trying to conceive, then actually you could get a lot of this stuff in place a lot earlier. And when you think about male fertility, that is really, really important, because the men typically get overlooked in the process. So what will happen is a couple will typically start trying to conceive, you know, a year down the line, maybe 18 months down the line, they'll go and see their doctor. The doctor will run some standard tests. The guy will have a semen analysis. And then they head, you know, inevitably the path leads to IVF, which then, you know, could be one cycle, two cycles, three cycles. It could be failure after failure. At some point, usually after a couple of failed cycles, maybe a couple of recurrent miscarriages, they might say, and it's only a might, they might say, let's have a look at the guide. Let's have a look at the sperm in a bit more detail.
Right.
It's like, wow. Okay, so you're now 2.5 years down the line. God knows how many thousands of pounds or dollars you spent going through all this treatment. Now you want to investigate the, you know, 50% of the issue. Why go this far? So, you know, I think if people actually thought about kind of preconception care and think about getting help ahead of actually starting a family, they could learn a lot about themselves, a lot about their health, a lot about their well-being, and a lot about their fertility. And I know, Trey, when you kind of reviewed the webinar, it was the knowledge is power thing that really kind of hit you, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it is, you know, and in the fertility game, knowledge is power. And it's because actually it's a very disempowering process. You know, if you end up in an IVF clinic, you're kind of handing yourself over to them physically and to some degree emotionally. Guy's got to do his bit in the pot. The woman's got to go through all the hormone stimulation and egg retrieval and what have you. You know, wouldn't it be better to try and avoid all of that by getting tested thoroughly and investigating your fertility way ahead of any of that? You know, it's common sense, isn't it? You know, you wouldn't run a marathon without doing some planning and training beforehand. You know, not that trying to conceive is always a marathon, but for some couples it is. So yeah. It just makes, you know, common sense, really.
Yeah, and that's what we've been talking a lot here, that it doesn't make, it's crazy to me that, especially, you know, we've seen some doctors, particularly Astrid has seen many doctors, and it's interesting how often the message from doctors has been like, oh, you know, like, try for like blanket statements, like try for a year. And if it doesn't work, then come back after a year, which seems, I don't know, that's I always felt that seemed sort of crazy, that instead of like having some, like without any advice of what to do, it's like, well, don't worry about anything. Just try for a year and then we'll see. Instead of having, yeah, like a plan and acknowledging that both, you know, both partners have a role to play, an equal role to play in terms of, you know, like the conceptive health. And that if you go into it blind and just wait for a year blind, you might like, why not just get upstream and, right. And know what's going on before you even begin, so that you, instead of just hoping for an entire year or plus, like you said, like to keep going for a year or two of treatments without ever even questioning sperm health or something like that, just makes no sense at all.
Yeah, and I can't understand that rationale a touch, in that, you know, we know 85% of couples will conceive within 2 years. So, you know, chances are for the vast majority, you go off and try for a year, it's going to happen. You know, if the guy's azoospermic, he's producing no sperm in his ejaculate because something's missing in his, you know, in his makeup, or, you know, the testicles just aren't working. That's a whole lot of trying and it's never going to happen.
Right.
Right.
And I think, you know, I guess one of the issues is that a lot of couples are starting to think about families a lot later. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're a woman in your mid, late 30s and you're told to go away and try for a year or 2 years, that changes your odds quite drastically, both naturally and if you end up going for IVF.
Right.
So actually, you know, again, just getting informed, getting tested ahead of the game. You know, it's for a guy to do a semen analysis as a very basic starting point is not outrageously expensive if you do it privately. Obviously, over here in the UK, we've got the wonderful NHS, so a guy can do it for free. But, you know, just check that there's some there, you know, for starters, because you wouldn't know otherwise. You know, you'll be completely oblivious. So very, very simple test, you know. But of course, you know, one of the other factors in all of this is we're never led to believe that it's a male issue. You know, education and society has us believe that fertility is a woman's issue, which puts a huge amount of pressure on women. They carry the emotional kind of physical burden of that. But actually, you know, 50% of fertility issues sit with the man. So, you know, yeah, go into it with your eyes open.
For sure. And in terms of going back a second to like kind of getting upstream of it, getting ahead of it, and what you can sort of do like before it's been, you know, a year or two or three and multiple IVF cycles. What would you recommend as like the first steps in terms of like just engaging with knowledge around male fertility and like personal fertility? Yeah. What would the first steps be? And when do you feel like would be like an appropriate time for a couple or a man to take those first steps?
I think really for any couple, if you say, okay, let's try for a family, why not go and get tested at that stage? You know, so for a guy, just going to a semen analysis, just be sure there's some there. If there's some there and it's all in normal parameters, that's a good starting point. Doesn't mean that there aren't other problems there, but it's a good starting point. For the woman, she could do, you know, just some very simple tracking, you know, get to know your menstrual cycle, understand it, pay attention to it. Whether you go and do ovulation prediction kits or temperature charting or any of that, that tends to be once you're a little way in, but you could do that. Yeah, you could do that for a few months ahead of you trying to conceive. Actually tune into that kind of window. For a guy, you know, regular ejaculation is a really key and important part of sperm health. And cleaning up your diet, you know, they're all very, very simple things that you can do to kind of optimize your chances and health, you know, at early doors. If after 6 months, maybe you might want to dig a little bit deeper and start doing some more advanced tests. You know, there's so many factors when it comes to trying to conceive. You know, the age of the man, the age of the woman, the man's job, the woman's job. You know, medical history. You know, there's so many variables. It's hard to say, well, every couple should do this. It depends. Sure. You know, if you said to me, okay, well, the couple are 38, 39. And they're just thinking about starting, then it would probably be quite a different answer. But okay, actually, let's go and do, you know, full egg reserve check for the woman. Let's do a full kind of check for the guy and see where you're at. And it might be, much as IVF isn't always the answer, it might be, okay, actually, you're better off going to IVF within the next 6 months rather than trying naturally. It very, very much depends. And I think, you know, again, this is where knowledge is power. If you understand your fertility and how that changes with age, then you can plan for it and you can, you know, take the appropriate action.
Yeah, I like that a lot. You mentioned that I did, one of my big takeaways from the webinar was the knowledge is power thing that you said, because I was thinking, as again, we've spoken about here and we've spoken about, we're speaking about before, that like, I don't know if it's generational, but there has always been this feeling of like, or the way that it was taught to us is like, if you have unprotected sex, you'll just like have a kid.
It'll just happen.
And it's and like, you don't need to know any more than that, like full stop, yeah. Right, period. And so when I listened to your words before, I was thinking that like, it is true that it's weird that I had previously believed that I didn't need to have that knowledge. And it is, like you said, it's very liberating to have the knowledge about your own body on all aspects, right? Like in terms of directly what one consider your fertility health, like you say, for me, like my sperm health, but also having tabs on all the other parameters of my health as well, feels much better than just hoping something happens,
like winging it,
than winging it.
Yeah.
Well, and also actually I think a really valid point for men and male fertility is suboptimal fertility in a man is a very good indicator of future health issues as well.
Interesting.
So, you know, if a guy's got low testosterone, I think it's cardiovascular health will be affected. Wow. You know, you know, if he's obese, then obviously, you know, we know diabetes and heart disease and all that. But, you know, there is a very, very close correlation between sperm health and, you know, male overall health and longevity. So, again, it's another parameter. It's another way of checking and thinking, okay, you know, is there something else I need to be aware of here?
I mean, that's so interesting, because then knowledge about your sperm health will not only be helpful in terms of like from a fertility aspect, but also just from like an overall health aspect.
Yeah. And you know, if you, let's say, you know, for a woman, if she goes and has a natural follicle count scan or gets an AMH blood test to see what her egg reserve is, if at say 32 or whatever, that's showing that it's much lower than normal, much lower than average, then that's going to give you an indication that you're likely to go through the menopause a bit earlier. That also gives, you know then that your fertility is declining earlier, so that might change your timeline and your plan. There's so much we can learn, you know, if we tune into our bodies, if we get tested, if we look at this stuff. And fertility, I think, does give us a very good window into our overall health, and allows us to make some great changes. You know, for some people, they won't do this. They'll sail through, they have their kids easily, and they'll be none the wiser. Mm. I find it fascinating, you know, that you can do this kind of investigation, start looking at this stuff, and it will, you know, inform you about your future health.
That's fascinating. I don't think we had heard that before.
No.
We've not come across that information before. I love that.
It's great imparting this kind of knowledge with people. It's so exciting because then, I might be able to do something with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Totally.
I want to change our topic a little bit here.
Go for it.
I wrote down, are there any myths around male fertility that you find yourself having to regularly dispel?
I liked this one. I thought it was quite a good question. I think the biggest one we've kind of skirted around or touched on is that fertility isn't a man's issue. I think that's probably the biggest myth. And the sooner we can get that message out, the better, so that men realize that they have an incredibly important role to play here and that the issues could lay with them. And that's a very, very hard thing for a lot of men to get over and to accept. And, you know, if they get a diagnosis of azoospermia or something, you know, so no sperm in the ejaculate, that is absolutely devastating for a guy. But actually, if we got rid of that kind of thing, that kind of belief system, then actually guys are going to be far better prepared and far more likely to get tested and understand what's going on. So I think that's definitely one that's got to go. But the one that kind of popped to mind when I read that question kind of earlier this week was this concept that the longer a man stores his sperm up, the more he's going to have, and that's going to be good. That is not true. It's not true in the slightest. So, you know, another big takeaway maybe for you guys and for any of the guys listening is don't store them up. They don't like being stored up. It actually does them a lot of damage. So the longer your sperm are held in your, it's in the epididymis, which is kind of like the kind of pre kind of chamber almost before they're ejaculated, the more prone they are to heat damage and oxidative stress, which means it's going to damage the DNA integrity of that sperm, which is going to make it less likely to, you know, for an embryo to develop. Or if the embryo does develop, there's going to be abnormalities and it may lead to miscarriage. So don't store it up. A guy should be, you know, if you're trying to conceive, a guy should be ejaculating probably every 3 to 5 days. And certainly don't, you know, a lot of couples will target the ovulation window and say, right, okay, we have sex every day or every other day from day 10 to day 16 or something of a woman's cycle. And then the guy does nothing after day 16 and waits till that window comes around again. So whatever he's producing in that window is been stored up for weeks. So it's pretty naff. So yeah, that's good. I like that one. I think that's quite a good big myth to dispel.
That is good. I into that a little bit. We were just talking about that maybe a couple episodes ago where I saw some study about the appropriate amount of ejaculations in a year. And we both were trying to figure out true?
That's excessive.
Like they have broken it up via over the course of 365 days.
How many was it as a matter of interest? I suppose you can work it out, right?
You know, I think I worked it out to months and it was
21 times a month or something.
21 times a month or something. Yeah, which we both were like, is that excessive?
We were like, whoa, that's...
I mean, I'm pretty shocking at math. So that's probably going to work out an average of 3 to 4 times a week, isn't it?
Yeah,
it would be. Or five times a week, 4 weeks in a month. Yeah, there you go, 3 to 5 days. So yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Because that's, I feel like that, like you said before, that's another, like, I had never heard that before.
No.
And you would think you would, but I never have. I want to, your first answer though, when you were speaking about just the misinformation or the lack of information in general for around male fertility or the messaging that it's like non-existent or just not important. Do you, I mean, you have a lot of experience in this field, Ian. This is a two question. I just came up with two things in my head. One, you've been at it for a long time. Have you seen a drastic change over the years in awareness for men? And two, what do you think currently are the roadblocks to it being, to male fertility being more widespread knowledge?
Good questions. That second one's probably quite tricky, so I'll come back to that. And chances are I'm going to go and digress here and forget what the question is. But the first one, is there more awareness?
Yeah, over your time period as a professional.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. But I've been, you know, for many, many years, like I said, I worked predominantly with women. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, the majority of people in my clinic are women going through fertility treatment, but I'm still able to offer the support to the men either, you know, remotely through the clinic or through some testing or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But having launched the, you know, I think really what was the UK's first male fertility support group, which was back in April 2020, so just as we hit our first lockdown here in the UK, that was phenomenal, you know. And then that group was, that was run by Fertility Network UK, a charity for couples trying to conceive. You know, that was just amazing. You know, we'll get 30, 40, 50 guys turning up month on month on Zoom. You know, and Trey, you can come and join us. You know,
I would love to.
It's worldwide. We've had a guy from LA. We've had, definitely had a guy from Australia. So, you know, it's not, you know, Zoom breaks down barriers and quarantine and travel restrictions. It's great. And, so yeah, so that kind of has grown and grown. And then we kind of, combined with the Him Fertility campaign, which is a campaign that was, it was a TV documentary by a chap called Rod Gilbert, who's a comedian in the UK. He did this really fantastic documentary. I don't know if you guys would be able to access it over there.
Maybe.
Because it was on BBC.
Okay. Mm.
If you can find it, it was absolutely outstanding. So he kind of brought this kind of great awareness and publicity to the whole kind of thing, which tied in beautifully with what me and my kind of co-host Toby Trice were already doing. So it definitely shifted male fertility up the agenda, and the amount of conversations that we're now having, you know, is phenomenal. That's why I'm here chatting to you guys, because you found me, I got asked to do a webinar. You know, me and Toby are getting asked to do events pretty regularly. And just beginning of this week, we had our fertility show, the UK fertility show, and that was actually held online this year. But we had there were a lot of male fertility presentations, but I had a whole day where I was presenting and hosting with, you know, some of the top UK you know, specialists, professors and doctors in male fertility. And that, I don't think the fertility show's ever had that level of coverage of male fertility. So, you know, I said to the organizers afterwards, said, this, you know, it's awesome that you've had us here. We need to be here every year now. This has to be part of the show. So yeah, definitely the awareness is growing. And the more and more that happens, then hopefully the more confident men feel about speaking up and getting help. And then hopefully more and more resources and people like me will start popping up and say, look, yes, we help men, you know, and we can do stuff for you. So yeah, it is changing. What are the roadblocks? That was the second part, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the biggest issues is the stigma that's attached to it for a man. You know, for a man to stand up and say, I've got no sperm, or I've got poor sperm, I can't father a child, that's really, really difficult. You know, it strikes incredibly deep for a guy, I think, to not be able to conceive and to know that it's his fault or it's an issue on his side. You know, it's not the brave, butch, macho thing to do, is it? And I guess, you know, some people call this toxic masculinity, that, you know, a man's got to be a man. He's got to be butch. He can't show his emotions, you know. It's just rubbish, really, isn't it? But this is what society has led us to believe, and led us to believe that it's not never a man's issue. But it is, you know, or it can be. And we need to make it okay for men to accept that, understand that, and talk about that. If they want to, some won't. Some will never, ever talk about this. And they will struggle with it, you know, on their own, or they'll cope with it in their own way. But for those that want to understand it, want help, want to get advice, get support, then we need to make that available for them. And that's where, you know, me, in terms of what I do one-to-one with men, it is really important. And that's then also where the HIM Fertility Support Group comes in that it offers that peer-to-peer support. So we've got kind of 15, 20 guys who are kind of a core group that have been with us pretty much since the off. And what happens now is we talk, we open up a subject, whatever is going on for somebody, and the guys support each other. And it's really, really magical to see these guys saying, oh yeah, no, I had that procedure and this happened and that happened. And yeah, it hurt for a couple of days, but I was all right afterwards. Or, oh yeah, no, I've been through that. It was awful, you know. It's incredible. Absolutely amazing. You know, me and Toby sit back and Rob Gilbert joins us sometimes. It's like, this is amazing, you know, to see guys supporting each other like that. So if we can get over that hurdle of the stigma and the concept that you're less of a man if you have a sperm issue, then actually it opens up a whole world of support and opportunities for guys to get help. So did that answer the question?
Absolutely. And I appreciate that you're out there doing that. That's wonderful.
Yeah. And of course, like, I mean, as a therapist myself, the fact that it also includes the sort of like emotional peer support aspect of it just sounds so crucial, both on like a personal level for each of these men, but also in terms of sort of busting that first myth that you spoke about, that this is like not something that is important or needs to be discussed or, you know, any of that.
Yeah. I mean, like in the support group, we have our right laugh sometimes, you know, because where else can a guy, you know, turn around and say, I don't know, he missed the pot, you know, when giving a sample, you know? And you know, the joys of one of the guys called it a masturbatorium, you know, the room where he's got to go and give his sample. Wow. And how, you know, how cringeworthy and horrible it was, you know, and like, oh God, you know, some horrible 80s porn mags, you know, you know. So we can have a laugh about that stuff because all of the guys in that room, that virtual room, get it. They understand it and they've been through it. So we can have a laugh, but also we've had some really, really deep kind of heavy nights where we've talked about suicide. We've talked about couples splitting up. We've talked about, you know, guys that are having to choose donor sperm and how incredibly hard that is and whether they can do it or not. And that can all be in one evening. You know, we can go from that comedy to that depth of emotion. And some guys want to join in with that and chat about it, and some guys don't. We find actually we get a lot more guys turning their camera on these days. When we started, it was actually, and that's always an option for anyone joining the group, is turn your camera off, turn your mic off, and don't join in. But they just listen, and knowing that you're not alone when you're struggling with this stuff is probably one of the biggest things, because, you know, I can only imagine. I've not been through what a lot of these men have been through, but, you know, I've experienced so much by running the support groups and in my practice. But, you know, for a guy to get a phone call from his doctor saying that you've got no sperm, that's just devastating. And then where does a guy go with that? And what does he do with that? It's not the sort of thing you then, you know, just drop into conversation with your next door neighbor. So, oh, I just found out about any sperm. You know, it's a huge burden. It's a huge emotional challenge. So providing that space for guys to come and find that they're not alone, they're not the only one, is, you know, I'm so proud of it. I'm so lucky to do what I do, and I love what I do. And to know that we're making that change for men is so powerful.
That sounds so wonderful.
Yeah.
That's the first instance of that. I'm sure that there are others groups like that. There must be somewhere. But yours is definitely the first I've ever heard of.
We've like really heard of, yeah.
Well, you know, I'd just say come and check out the HIM Fertility Facebook page, and there's a closed male male-only group linked to that page. And yeah, it's, you know, worldwide. It doesn't matter where you're from. And same for the support group meetings, you know, come along. So they're typically the third or fourth Wednesday in the month, usually 8 o'clock UK time kickoff. So that's quite a civilized time for you guys over in New York, although you'll probably be at work. But yeah, if you can join us, come join us.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and we'll provide links in the episode description for everyone to be able to access all of this too. So
with that in mind, speaking to our listeners, the majority of our listeners are, as I'm sure you can imagine, are women. And so how can they best support male partners during this time period? Or you know, like what, this, the whole thing is always a two-way street, right? And so like what, like if we're going to acknowledge and try to promote male fertility, like what's the best way to support that as a partner?
Such a good question. And that's one I seem to be getting more and more every time I do these podcasts or Insta lives or whatever. And I don't think I've got a straight, simple answer for that, probably because, you know, there isn't a straight, simple answer for this because everyone's different. You know, men, you know, it's a lot for them to process if they're in this situation. They carry, what's interesting is men carry the burden of seeing their partner go through fertility treatment. So, you know, typically, you know, we're talking here if a couple have been through IVF, the guy feels pretty helpless in that situation. And what he hates seeing is his wife or partner going through, you know, various interventions and drug therapies and goodness knows what else, and the heartache of failure or whatever. So he very much feels he has to stay strong for that. The financial burden, funnily enough, sits more on a man's shoulders. Not necessarily because that is how it always is for a couple, but I think, you know, that there's a deep thing within a man that, you know, we're there to provide. You know, much of some of this stuff is a bit stereotypical. I think it's also quite hardwired that, you know, men are providers, you know, we're there to fix and provide. So he can't fix it and he's got to stay strong and provide and all this, that and the other. And if it's a male factor issue, he's then trying to process and deal with his own emotions around the fact that, you know, he feels like a failure or less of a man. I think, how do we help him or how does the woman help him? Is try and get him to open up and talk, really, is the key thing. If a guy can express it and get it out, it will make a huge, huge difference. And I think sometimes some of the issues with couples is that, you know, the woman will have gone and done all the research. She would have looked up the supplements. She would have looked up the right diet. She'd be tracking her cycle. She would have even looked up the supplements for him and given them to him. And then he's forgotten to taken them, which will drive her nuts. Then she starts nagging him. He's got to be told when he's got to perform. He feels huge pressure in the bedroom. He doesn't want to perform, doesn't want to have sex, or he can't perform. It just becomes this horrible melting pot of stress and pressure. So I think one of the important things is that the woman doesn't, you know, tries not to add to that pressure to a guy, but actually try and encourage him to talk openly and honestly about how he's feeling and what's going, you know, what's this like for you? And it doesn't have to be, oh, how are you feeling today, darling? You know, it's like, what's going on? You know, how are you? What does this feel like for you? Because I'm finding this really sucks.
Yeah.
You know, to put it out there, own it and talk about it. And you know, one of the things I've said quite a few times on this subject is go for a walk or go for a drive. And that's a really good way to kind of instigate some of these conversations where you're not face to face. So you're not sitting there having your dinner and trying to talk about sex and your relationship. You know, you go out for a lovely long walk together, go, you know, if you're walking the dog or just go for a drive. You know, that's a good opportunity sometimes to open up conversations. Or you might say, oh, I heard, you know, or I was listening to this podcast the other day and this guy was talking about how guys feel this or guys feel that. So it's not about him, but it's about other people that may be experiencing similar things. And it's another way of bringing out that conversation. Yeah, I think that's got to be the key message, is try and get them to talk. And try and get them to open up. And if they're not going to talk to you, try and direct them to some kind of resource or some kind of area. Let them kind of find it, not find it for themselves, but find their own way through it. A lot of the guys that either come to see me or are in the support group have been sent by their partners. You know, certainly, probably the vast majority that have found the infertility support group, it's been found by their wives.
Very interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
I could go on a soapbox about the mental load and all of that sort of stuff another day, but that is very interesting how involved partners are in that sort of aspect. But in terms of like the types of conversations to have and, you know, the idea of going for a long walk or going for a drive, like I could totally see how that would help like make it feel not so incredibly vulnerable and like so incredibly difficult. But really just like, yeah, let's catch up. Like, what is this like for you?
Yeah. And I think maybe, you know, for a woman to say to a guy, look, you know, you may not be able to fix this. And, you know, I know you're probably trying to stay strong for me, but actually one of the ways you could help me is by letting me know how you feel. Because actually, if I understand how you feel, it makes it a lot easier for me, or we can deal with that together, or we can find you some help. But actually, if you're not opening up to me, I find that really difficult, you know. And some, you know, I'm not your stereotypical, you know, macho man, not in the slightest. You know, I'm quite open. I'm happy to talk about emotions and process stuff, but a lot of men aren't like that. So it's going to be hard for them. So just try and find a way to open things up a little bit. Have a date night. That's another good thing. So have a monthly date night or a weekly date night where, you know, it's not about sex and it's not about trying for a baby and it's not about fertility. It's just, you know, don't lose yourselves. Don't lose who you are as a couple and why you're together, you know. Because you're not just together to make a baby. You're together because you love each other and there's something between you. And I think it's very easy to lose sight of that when all of this gets too much.
Man, that's really well said.
Totally. Yeah.
That's well done.
Yeah. I mean, there's really no need for it to be an isolating experience if you're doing this with another person.
Mm. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of the couples, you know, this can unfortunately destroy relationships. But actually, I must admit the vast majority of couples that I work with, they're incredibly strong, you know, and it's probably because they've spoken, they've talked. I think if you don't talk, that's probably when it breaks down. But, you know, if you've got open lines of communication, it will make you stronger. So, you know, there can be some good that will come out of it.
Ian, thank you so much. This has been, you know, I knew this conversation was going to be good. I feel like we've gotten even more out of it than I hoped to, which is wonderful. Right.
That's
good. I really appreciate your time. Do you want to let us know and let the listeners know where they can reach you, or if they're trying to seek your services, or if they want to follow you on social media?
Sure. Yeah. So I am on the wonderful world of Instagram, which was a new addition to my life, like only a year and a half ago. I think I'm Ian_Stones_ or something like that, but I should be pretty easy to find. Okay. My website is hovefertilityandwellness.co.uk. But yeah, I would have thought Instagram's quite an easy place to find me and reach out, and, you know, always happy to have a chat with anybody and see if I can and help and support, you know. And I think there's so much we haven't covered today, you know, about male fertility testing, about, you know, some of the myths around health and diet and stress. You know, I don't know if you've ever covered off things like varicocele and azoospermia and things like that. So DNA fragmentation, there's another interesting subject. So, you know, by all means, if you want me back to
yeah, we might need to do a part two.
Yeah, yeah, part two, three, four. I'm happy with that. You know, I could talk for days on male fertility. So, yeah, very happy.
Awesome.
Amazing. Well, this is like, I think that this is a really wonderful starting point for our listeners. Just like, even just broaching this topic and figuring out like why it's important and that there are things that can be done and the like emotional and communication piece of it, all incredibly helpful. So yeah, thank you.
My pleasure.